twice, Parshas Korach, Tavshin Ayin Dalet. There are two times in this week's Parsha that we see Moshe Rabbeinu falling with his face to the ground, falling face first to the ground after Bnei Yisrael act with insolence. It's in Parak Tes Dayan, Pasuk Dalet. It says, Vayishma Moshe Vayipo Alpanov. He heard what Korach and his men were saying, and he immediately fell down to his face. After they were acting with such insolence, he immediately fell down. The first time Moshe does it by himself. The second time, it's after they complain, after all the people of Korach are dying, all the 250 men just spontaneously combusted, the other people had just been swallowed up by the ground, which is the coolest thing in the world. After all that, then the people complained again. They complained another time, right? And at that time, Aaron and Moshe bow down together. Our question is going to be, what made Moshe fall down to his face, to the ground, in the beginning of the parsha? Why was he able to do that? What made him so upset? So Rashi says, simple answer, the reason why is because he knew this was Sirkon Revi, which meant that they had already sinned four times. This is the fourth sin that they have been over. Now, what was the first three? That's a great question. Meraglim would have been number three. I don't know what the first two were. If the Egel Azov is counted, if it's the complainers in last week's fight in Parshas Baloska, I don't know what it was. But this is the fourth time that they had done something wrong. And he knew that something was going to happen immediately. Because the first three times that Bnei Yisrael sinned, they were not necessarily punished right after. The Egel Azov took a little bit. The Meraglim was over the next 39 years. And whatever the third complaint was also not a direct punishment that was immediately afterward. So he knew there was going to be a tremendous Chilul Hashem that was caused from what Bnei Yisrael had just done, and that's called Sirchon Revi'i. So therefore, he fell on his face, seemingly, Rashi is saying, to daven to God over the great Chilul Hashem that just happened. The Sifsei Chachamim, the way he explains it is that it's clear that he didn't daven for them, according to Rashi. That he wasn't, because he fell to his face to the ground and was talking to them while his face was on the ground. I don't know about you guys. Okay, I don't know what you guys do on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur when you get down to the ground, but when you get your face to the ground on Yom Kippur and you're yelling out loud, Baruch Shem Kavod Melchizedek Olam Vaed, maybe you guys are okay with it. The blood is rushing to my head and I can't say a thing. So I don't know if you guys have a different makeup than I do, and maybe you guys are perfectly fine with bending your head down to the ground and somehow that works for you. I can't do it. I have no ability to do it. So when I bend my head all the way down and it's all the way in the ground and I'm literally blood is rushing in, I don't know how Moshe Rabbeinu could talk to the people and yell out loud to them what he was saying of Boker, Vyoda Hashem Asher Lo, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will tell you what to do. I have no idea how that's possible, how that's going to be over here. You really need to see other Meforshei Rashi, but that's how the Sifsei Chachamim says it, that he was talking to them as he fell to the ground, and he just fell to the ground because he was so upset at what they had done. Now the Rashbam, the Chizkuni, and the Baal HaTurim all argue that he fell down to the ground dafka to daven. It was on purpose to make sure he was davening. Okay, that's another thing, and that's what it says over there. The Ibn Ezra says he fell down for a completely different reason. Here's the reason why he had to fall down. It wasn't for davening. It wasn't for talking or feeling bad about Bnei Yisrael. It's because he all of a sudden had a nevuah. It's as if he had a brand new type of prophecy that he'd never had before. And here's the reason why. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah was different from everyone else's. His nevuah was called Peh El Peh Adaber Bo. B'mare V'lo B'chidos. It was a vision of a Kaddish Baruch Hu telling him words, not a riddle that he had to translate for himself. He was able to speak to a Kaddish Baruch Hu, so to speak, mouth to mouth, as if he was speaking directly with God, like a friend to a friend. Not like Nevi'im. Nevi'im, they could get nevuah in some crazy spot where they weren't expecting it, and it's going to be almost like they're in an epileptic seizure, or they have to fall asleep in order to get the nevuah. Moshe Rabbeinu was wide awake, standing up, showing himself that he was able to speak to God. But this time, Moshe Rabbeinu was not roi to get nevuah. The way that it's explained by the Avi Ezri, and then the Ramban as well, seems to say the same thing. It's that Moshe Rabbeinu got angry. And because he got angry, he was so upset at what was going on, he couldn't get nevuah in the same way he normally did. He was like a level down. So for the first and last time of his life, he got a nevuah that was unclear, and he literally fell to the ground from the nevuah, the way a normal Navi falls to the ground, like Yoshua would fall to the ground, like Yechezkel would fall to the ground, like Yeshaya would fall to the ground. That's what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu. He literally fell down to the face of the ground. He could not handle this Nevuah that he was given. And that's the reason, says the Ibn Ezra, the Avi Ezri, and the Ramban, how he ended up falling down to the ground, because this Ruach HaKodesh came to him in such a flash. What he had to do, he wasn't expecting it, and it almost killed him. That's what it was, and that's the reason why have a yipo upon him. Now the Ramban also points out that Aaron didn't fall to his face over here, because he admitted, he looked at Korach, when Korach said, hey, why does he get to be the Kohen Gadol? I want to be the Kohen Gadol. Aaron was like, yeah, he's right. I'm with that. I agree with him. I shouldn't be the Kohen Gadol. Let Korach be the Kohen Gadol. It was an amazing feat of anivus of Aaron. But maybe that's the reason why the Orach Chaim HaKadosh says, maybe that's why Moshe Rabbeinu fell down to his face. He didn't want to argue with them. He knew he had to. He knew he had to show them that they were wrong, and he knew that he would have to do such a thing. But he didn't want to argue with them. He had no desire to go up against them and to argue and to say to them, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong. He had no desire to do that. He wanted what he really wanted. If everything was going according to him, he would have just put his face down to the ground and say, fine guys, it's yours. I don't want to do anything anymore. Me and Aaron give up everything. It's all yours. That's what he wanted to do. Says the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, he fell down to the face of the ground, saying to himself, I'm not worthy of fighting against Korach. Korach is a great man. Guys, don't get yourselves fooled. Although this is not our concentration of this year today, do not think that Korach was just a jealous nobody. He was the neshama of Kayin. This was Kayin being somehow getting a Gilgal inside this world again, which means this is a man who was born from Adam and Chava. We're talking about a man who was by far the richest man in the world. He had a third of the treasures of Yosef HaTzadik. He found them, or he got them. He was the owner of the keys when they were back in Mitzrayim. And he was so kadosh, says the Chiddush Arim, that had they eventually gone to Eretz Yisrael, he would have been the Levi HaGadol. We don't have that. We have a Kohen Gadol. We don't have a Levi Gadol. He would have been the Levi Gadol, says the Chiddush Arim. He didn't want to wait. He didn't feel like waiting anymore. He didn't feel like pushing himself. He wanted to get it immediately, and for that, he was punished. But don't think that this is just some strange guy that just gets up and decides to fight everybody and everything that's right over there. The Teres Shlomo. Do you guys know who the Teres Shlomo is? It's okay if you don't. The Radomsker. Do you know who the Radomsker was? It's okay if you don't. He was from a city called?
Radomsk.
Very good. Well, no, Radomsker. So he's from a city called?
Radomsk.
Radomsk. Very good. The tells me where he was from. The Radomsker. The Tiferes Shlomo is a famous Hasidic rabbi. He's third generation from the Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov. Says the Tiferes Shlomo, this was a sign of Mesiris Nefesh. Like Yipol Panev was showing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'd rather die so that I can get a kapara for Klal Yisrael. Why bother punishing Bnei Yisrael for what they're doing right now? Why bother punishing Korach and the 250 men? Said Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm willing to die for all of Klal Yisrael. And that's what he meant by Yipol Panev, as if he threw himself to the ground. I'm being Moser Nefesh completely. I have nothing in this world. I want to die right now. That's what he's willing to do, and that's what he was saying over here. Pretty crazy, but that's what he was willing to say. Now, the Mayona Shel Torah says the reason why he fell down now for the first time is because everyone said, they got up and they said, Kulam Kedoshim, we're all holy. Right? The whole Eid of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was holy. Says the Mayona Shel Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu looked at that and he was so upset because he knew how hard he had worked to become the person that he was. It wasn't easy for Moshe Rabbeinu to become such a great person, to lead himself into the person that he was. If anybody's ever seen the Tiferes Yisrael, at the end of Kiddushin, that's in Mishnayos. You know the Mishnayos with the Ayin Gimel Perushim? The 73 Perushim altogether? So at the very end of Kiddushin, the very last Mishnah, where it says, Tov Shevarofen LeGehenim, that the best of doctors go to Gehenim. Anybody saw there's a doctor? You guys right there, don't worry about it. But either way, that the best of doctors, when the Mishnah says that, Tiferes Yisrael goes through a massive little piece, and he brings down a Medrash. Now this Medrash is quoted from the Shita Mikubeses in the third parak of Ksuvas. There are those that say that this is not a true Medrash, and it's a fake. It's some Christian guy that put it in there and somehow it got accepted. But nonetheless, the Tiferes Yisrael says it, that Moshe Rabbeinu had the face, meaning his facial features, was that of a murderer, a thief, a liar, an adulterer, etc., etc., etc. That he had all the face, everything physically, that's what he should have been. And he worked on himself like a dog. He worked on himself like anything to make sure that that wouldn't affect him, and he became the greatest un of the greatest Balmidos, the greatest person to have ever lived. And he gives a whole story of what happened with a king who wanted to paint the face of Moshe Rabbeinu, etc., etc. Unbelievable Tiferes Yisrael. It's a long, long piece, and I suggest you look it up, last Mishnah in Kiddushin, but it's an unbelievable one. And it could be that this is referring to this over here as well, that that's the idea behind reminded of what it's referring to over here, that he fell down saying, how do they think they're so kadosh? Do they know how much work I put into myself to make myself kadosh? That's ridiculous. The Baal HaTanya was once approached. This is the Baal HaTanya, the first Lubavitch Rebbe. He was once approached by a mechutzef, a guy who asked him why he gets to be the leader of Klal Yisrael. I don't know if this was a misnagid, the evil misnagged him. I don't know if this is one of his chassidim who just had a lot of chutzpah. But he went up to the Baal HaTanya and said, why you? What did you do? What do you do to deserve to become the leader of the Jews? So the Baal HaTanya immediately put his face down as if he was saying Tachma. Put his face down, just like that. He got up after a few minutes, turned to him and said, every neshama has a different part that it comes from, a part of Adam HaRishon. My neshama stems from the head of Adam HaRishon. Your neshama stems from the feet of Adam HaRishon. So that's a little blast. But he told him, because of that, the head always rules over the feet. That's what he told the guy, and the guy accepted it. I don't know if I would, but regardless, the guy accepted it and said, all right, fine. He walked away. The Talmidim went to the Baal HaTanya and said, explain. It's not what you really meant. Why did you bend down? Why did you do tachnun before you answered him? And the Baal HaTanya said, I learned it from Moshe Rabbeinu. He said the following, it's an amazing idea. When somebody gives you chutzpah, and you feel you don't deserve it, somebody said something to you which is not the right thing to say, and it was not a nice thing, it could be it's a sign from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you did something wrong. It's possible that you were wrong in something that you did, and this is a sign HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving you to tell you, stop it. Just stop it. You shouldn't have done that. It's possible that's what it is. So Moshe Rabbeinu had no idea. When Korach came up to him and said to him, Madu etis nesu al Kal Hashem, why are you bragging? Why are you showing off in front of all of the Kal Hashem? Why are you doing this? They said to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't sure. Was this because I deserve this, or is it because Korach's a Rasha? Which one is it? Because I'm doing something wrong, or because Korach is doing something wrong? So what did he do? He immediately put his head down. And he sat there and he thought to himself, what did I do this year? Did I do anything wrong? Did I not do anything wrong? And after sitting there for a few minutes, by Yipo upon him, he fell down to his face. He realized he didn't do a single thing wrong. I don't know if I could say that. I put my face down and I'd think of 100 billion things wrong. But he put his face down and said absolutely nothing. So he knew that it wasn't from Hashem. It's got to be from Korach. If it's from Korach, then he got up and he said, Korach, you're going to die. Now you're going to die. That's what he ended up telling Korach. Said the Baal HaTanya, did the exact same thing. I didn't know if the guy was a messenger, an emissary of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or he's doing it because he actually meant it. I don't know. I don't know which one it is. So what did I do? Fell down to his face, did a little bit of tachron, did a little bit of introspection, cheshben and nefesh, realized that he hadn't done anything wrong, so therefore, he realized he was fine. What's up?
Did he realize that it wasn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu?
That it wasn't. It was this guy. And because it was this guy was being just a mechutzef. So he realized, okay, this guy's just a mechutzef. It's not because I did anything wrong. It's not because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling me, why should I be that way? That's that. It's possible, says the Rabbeinu Bechaya, that this is part of the process of the destruction of Korach. If anybody remembers the Gemara that's mentioned Bava Metzia, Nun Tes, Amud Beis. It mentions Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanus got into a big fight with the Chachamim over something called the Tanur Shalach Noi. It was a round oven, and the kasha was whether or not it was Tahor or Tameh. Rabbi Eliezer Paskin Tahor, all the other Chachamim said Tameh. And they ended up, not only did this is the famous Gemara, you guys all have heard of it before. Rabbi Eliezer said, let the Kerub tree prove it, let the river prove it, let the walls of the Beis Medrash prove it, and the Kerub tree ran 400 amos, happens all the time, the river flowed the wrong direction, the walls of the Beis Medrash started caving in, and finally a Baskol came out and said, everything that Rabbi Eliezer says is correct. And Rabbi Yeshua said, Emashkif Baskol, we don't listen to a Baskol. And they ended up asking like Rabbi Yeshua, and they threw Rabbi Eliezer out of the Beis Medrash. They put him in Kerem, in excommunication. They threw him out completely. Do you remember that Gemara? The Gemara says that Ema Shalom, who is the wife of Rabbi Eliezer ben Horkanus, was the sister of Rabbi Gamliel. Is Ema Shalom, wife of Rabbi Eliezer, sister of Rabbi Gamliel, who was the Nasi at the time. She would not allow him to do tachnun. Why wouldn't she allow him to do tachnun? Because she knew that as soon as he went down into tachnun, he would kill Rabbi Gamliel. Because he was so upset. His tachnun was so powerful, she was able to kill people with his tachnun. So she wouldn't let him do tachnun. One day, she was either helping somebody at the door, she thought it was Rosh Chodesh, and it wasn't really Rosh Chodesh. Either way, she messed up. Rabbi Eliezer did tachnun. She came into the room and saw that Rabbi Eliezer was doing tachnun and said, "Get up, you just killed my brother." And a voice came out, a noise came out and said, "Oh, Rabbi Gamliel just passed away." Tachnun is powerful. I know we're so happy. Rabbi Haskell once told me in Skok Yeshiva that the amount of simcha that people get when you don't say tachnun should be enough to never say tachnun for the rest of your life. You know what it's like. When there's no tachnun, you get up there and they say, "Yiskadel, yiskad," you're just like, "Yeah! Yay!" And you're sitting there like throwing things in the air. You're like slapping five with a guy next to you you've never met before. It is the happiest time in the world. And no woman get it. They don't get it. If you've done tachnun before, and sometimes even high school kids can't get it, but if you've ever done tachnun before, you realize you just, it doesn't happen. Nobody's into it. Do you know tachnun by heart? Can you guys tell me tachnun by heart? Any of it? There are two things that you don't know by heart, even though you say it every day. The yom, and tachnun. Why? Because yom's the end. I'm done, alright? I've got a couple lines here, and I'm done. That's what ends up happening. And tachnun. You could probably tell me every other part of davening. Maybe like the fourth halleluka you'd be a little bit off on. Maybe something like that. But you could probably tell me most of davening, because you're used to davening, etc., depending on how early you come, late you come, etc. But when it comes to the yom and tachnun, people are out. Vayomer, David, I don't know. Something to God. There's nothing. Do you even know where tachnun is from?
No.
Did you know there are three parts? Well, two parts are from Tehillim. The big part of Hashem al biapcha socheni is Tehillim. But the first pasuk, Vayomer David al God Sarli Ma'od, do you know where that's from?
Navi.
Yeah, Navi. Not from Tehillim. Vayomer David al God Sarli Ma'od. Shmuel Beis. Do you know where the next part? Rachum v'chanun chatzasi. Oh, that's not part of the sin. No, it's a different pasuk. It's okay. No, it's also Tehillim. Film. It's just not there. It's because we're not into tachnun. Tachnun is unbelievably powerful. Says Rabbeinu Bechaya, when Vayipal Panim Moshe Rabbeinu bent his head down, it automatically caused Korach to have a death warrant on him in Shemayim. And if Korach wasn't so great, if he wasn't such a great person, he immediately would have been turned into a pile of dust. That's what would have happened. He would have been a pile of bones and dust on the ground if it wasn't so that he was so great. That's Rabbeinu Bechaya. Rabbi Yonis and Ibshit says the exact same idea. You've heard, whenever a Talmud Chacham looks at somebody, he either causes death or poorness to that person. So Rabbi Yonis and Ibshitz turned. Rabbi Yonis and Ibshitz says Moshe Rabbeinu had to put his face down. Because if he would have looked at them, if he would have looked straight at Korach and all those men, he would have immediately killed them. That's what would have happened. Because that's the awesomeness of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's just the look. We see that. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Elazar Bar Shimon, what happened when they left the cave? They came out of the cave after 12 years of being in that cave, learning Kabbalah the whole time. They came out and they saw a field. What did they do? They looked at it, and they burned it up completely. Because Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Elazar Bar Shimon were so powerful that they could mamish turn something into dust. That's what they were able to do. Awesome stuff. There's not too many people that are like that. Okay, but now we get into this separate part over here. Yonis Menuziel says something absolutely fascinating. Each one of them wanted to give their wives sota water. Why did they want to give their wives sota water, says Yonis Menuziel? They suspected Moshe of being together with their wives. So all of Korach, the 250 men, Dathan, Abiram, and On Ben Pelas, all got up and said to Moshe Rabbeinu, "We assume that you were together with our wives. We want to give our wives sota water." Crazy shot, right? Where did that come from? Where did that come from? Why would you say that? I'm sorry?
You have time for all that?
Seriously. It's 254 men. 254 women. I assume they were only married to one woman. Could be there was more. This is really based on the Gemara Sanhedrin Kof Yud, which really begs for the question, what in the world is going on there? How in the world could you accuse him of this? And then, because he was so embarrassed that they'd have accused him of this, he fell on his face to the ground. He couldn't handle it. He fell down on the ground. It's unbelievable. The Bala Turim says to Gematria, Vayishma Moshe, plus the seven letters that are there right there, eight letters, I'm sorry, five and three. Vayishma Moshe is the Gematria of 779, Mikan Shechashduhu Be'isha. They suspect him of being together with a woman. That's what he says over there, Bala Turim. Now, the Parish Jonas, I'm sorry?
Why would they use Allah that Moshe himself?
The Parish Yonason, good call, Parish Yonason says it was specific. They wanted to get Kohen, the Aaron Kohen to stop being the Kohen Gadol, right? Who feeds the sota water to the woman? The Kohen. Kohen is involved. The only Kohanim were related to Moshe. So they said, oh, well, Aaron can't feed it because he's obviously no gay of a devil. He's not going to want his brother to be seen as an adulterer. So he shouldn't drink the sota water. He shouldn't give the sota water to drink. So we need another Kohen. Let's get another Kohen inside here, someone who's not related to Moshe. So that's a nice little answer. I just can't believe they would be so audacious to be able to say it to Moshe up in his face, but I can definitely hear it. The Kliyakar says another reason. He says, anyone who has gaiva is automatically assumed that in the end he'll be nechshal with an Eishes Ish. If you have gaiva, pride, ego, and you're willing to stick it out, you're going to be together with a married woman because you think you're so great. And here's the Kliyakar. The Kliyakar is an unbelievable thing. Because a Baal Gaiva cannot stand that someone else is ruling over someone else. He sees a husband telling his wife what to do, which is what it was like back then, not necessarily today, but he saw a husband telling his wife what to do, and he says, why does he get to tell her what to do? I want to tell her what to do. So when he sees that, he purposely goes up to that woman and tries to take her as his own wife. Tries to grab her as his own wife. That's the idea of what this guy is. He's such a Baal Gaiva, he can't stand to see someone subservient to someone else aside from him. So they said, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're such a Baal Gaiva. You're such a Baal Gaiva, you must be over on Eishes Ish. Isn't it unbelievable, by the way? We just said about Moshe Rabbeinu, this is the biggest unov of all time. And yet they're going along and saying he's a Baal Gaiva? How could they be fooled on something like that? It's an unbelievable thing. The Eidus Behoste, Sefer Eidus Behoste says an unbelievable reason why. He says, you know why they did this now? Why did they come up with this right now and not beforehand? Because think about it. Who was with Moshe Rabbeinu at all times?
Yoshua.
But what just happened to Yoshua for the last 40 days? He was with the Meraglim, so he wasn't there. So they couldn't accuse him before because Yoshua was around him the entire time. Now that Yoshua is gone, who's with Moshe Rabbeinu? Now, there's no question, guys, this was a ridiculous taina. He stayed away from his own wife, let alone other people's wives. His camp was right outside where everybody was. Everybody could see him at all times. He had an open tent for anybody that wanted to come learn. It was open for anybody to come in. The only people that weren't allowed in were women. So it's a silly claim. But nonetheless, they were willing to do it to try to start these rumors, etc. What? There was a separate base medrash for women, which I assume Miriam was in charge of, but it's mentioned by the Kliyakar and Parshas Tetzaveh. So they did have a separate one. That was the Nashim Atzovos. Rick Schwab, this says an awesome answer. I love Rick Schwab. Rick Shimon Schwab says,
so
what? For Kinoi and Stira?
Yeah.
So there is an Achlokas, and there might be an opinion that says that the Kinoi only requires two, while the Stira doesn't require two. So it's passable. Meaning they warned their wife in front of two people. Guy went up to his wife and said, you better not be together with Moshe Rabbeinu in a private room in front of two people. Could have been two of his friends, two of the other 250, right? And they said, oh, there was Kinoi. And then he later on said, I saw her upstairs with Moshe Rabbeinu. So you can get around that. There is an opinion that says it's actually Rabbi Eliezer, the same Rabbi Eliezer we mentioned up above. But Rav Shimon Schwab says, the men would go home and they would complain about what Moshe Rabbeinu did, you know, things that he did, and the women would stick up for Moshe Rabbeinu. And because they stuck up for Moshe Rabbeinu, oh, 100%. 100%. It was, I would assume that they said it in such a way that the woman would say, come on, let's not talk about Moshe Rabbeinu. They said, oh, you're in love with Moshe Rabbeinu then. So they accused Moshe of being together with the wife. Such an unbelievable tiny. That's from Shimon Schwab. Now,
prophecy?
I'm sorry?
Last is in the Torah at this point.
Korach?
No, Moshe.
Moshe Rabbeinu, for sure.
I mean, like,
Passover,
right?
Oh, no. Did he lose his nevuah? You mean because he had 39 years where there was nothing? That's what you're referring to, or 38 and a half years, or whatever it is? No, he probably still had the ability to talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because it says he spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu three times in this parsha. So it's got to be that he had something to do with it. The Chassam Sofer says an unbelievable thing. You guys know the Gemara Brachos Sefchav, where Rabbi Yochanan sat outside the gates of the mikvah? Rabbi Yochanan sat outside the gates of the mikvah, and they asked him, why are you doing this? And he said, so that the woman can look at me and my beauty as they come out of the mikvah, and they'll think about me, and they'll have beautiful children that are like me. That's what he said. So first of all, start from over here, okay? Number one, Rabbi Yochanan's beauty was an odd thing. Number one, the Gemara says that he did not have a beard, which meant he had no Hadras Panim. No offense to everyone here, but he had no Hadras Panim. Okay, meaning, in order to get Hadras Panim, you're supposed to have a beard. Okay, you're okay. You're okay. You guys, you two are fine, but everybody else. Okay, the Hadras Panim, you're supposed to have a beard. You're supposed to have a beard, and that's that. So that's not beauty. That's number one. Number two, Rav Yochanan was a really big guy. The Gemara B'Metzia goes through it. I'm taking him all. He was a really big guy. I'm not saying big is not beautiful. I'm saying that big is not necessarily beautiful. So it's a little strange that Rav Yochanan is known that way. But big, he definitely had big.
Like fat or muscular. Tall. Broad. Like big.
Yes, 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 yes. In everything. Okay? In all that.
He was attractive. That meant he was healthy.
Let's assume that that was attractive in a way. Nonetheless, the Gemara says that he did not have the same type of beauty. Now, the funny thing about that Gemara, by the way, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, how do we know Rabbi Yochanan was beautiful? And he quotes that Gemara in Bava Metzia Pei Gimel, and he says, I think it's Pei Dalet Aleph, I don't remember, I just forgot to look it up. But it's around there, and it says, right, that Rabbi Avo was just like, and then he stops right there. Seemingly, it's Rabbi Bo was as beautiful as Rabbi Yochanan. That's not the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't quote Rabbi Yochanan at all over there. And it's a very strange Rashi where it seems to be saying, even Rashi doesn't quote it. He says, Rabbi Bo looked like the Hulu. And that's it. There is no Rabbi Yochanan over there. Rabbi Yochanan was not in the list of the most beautiful people. He's not listed over there. He is mentioned in that Gemara, but for other reasons. The real Gemara that goes to the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan is the Gemara in Brachos Daf Hey that mentions that Rabbi Yochanan came into a place where I think it was Rabbi Elazar that was sick, and he said, do you want your Yisurin? And he said, Lohen below Schar, and I don't want them, I don't want their Schar. And Rabbi Yochanan's like, okay. And he lifts it off his arm, and there's a huge light that came from his arm, and it shone throughout the entire room. So Rabbi Yochanan had a shine to his body. He shone like the sun. Now that makes sense that that was his beauty. His beauty was not necessarily a physical beauty, it was a spiritual beauty. He had the shine of the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yochanan was alive when the Beis HaMikdash was still around. He said, I am Anami Shakiri. I am one of the last of the beautiful people of Yerushalayim. Because he literally was one of the last people who was alive. He lived a long time, 258 years according to Seder Adoros. He lived for a long time. He was able to take that beauty and show it to other people, and he wanted the woman to get it. That's number one. So it wasn't that they were looking for his good looks. They were looking at the shine, and they wanted that shine. That's number one. Number two, Rabbi Yochanan could not see. Rabbi Yochanan had massive, massive eyelashes and eyelids that covered up his entire eyes. I'm sorry?
Didn't he look like a girl?
Sort of, because Rish Lakish jumped in after him, right? So you'd have to say he somewhat looked like a girl, but he had these huge eyelashes that covered up his eyes, in which he was not able to see unless you took a metal poker that would strip up the eyes and they would hold it open. That's in Bava Kama Kuf Yud Zayinim and Aleph. That's by Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan did not have normal eyes. That's the only way he was able to see Rav Kana, and then obviously when he saw Rav Kana, he killed him. That's a great story over there as well. But Rabbi Yochanan was not able to see. So he was sitting outside the mikvah. They didn't ask him, hey, Rabbi Yochanan, aren't you afraid of, I don't know, everything of doing this? They didn't ask him that because he couldn't see, and it wasn't really for beauty reasons. It was for a shine that they wanted to get. Nonetheless, the Gemara says that it's, I'm sorry?
How could he learn?
Rabbi Yochanan?
Yeah, he couldn't see.
He was, I mean, at some point he could see. One point he did, and then he memorized everything.
Rabbi Yosef was blind also.
What's that? Yosef?
Rabbi Yosef was blind.
Oh, Rabbi Yosef, and Rav Sheshes. Yeah, Rabbi Yosef, Rav Sheshes, Bava and Buta. There were Talmid Chachamim who were blind, who were still able to read, but they were still able to do things. What? Yeah, and obviously Rabbi Yochanan at any time could have gone like this. Would have been annoying, you know, but at any time he could have done that, and then he would have been able to see, and it would have been, you know, a little crazy. But nonetheless, maybe he had these metal pokers that just held his eyes open. He was like, like that the whole time. Be a little freaky to look at him, but nonetheless, he'd still be able to read something, and that would be good. Says the Chazam Sofer, and here's the pshat over here. He says, from that Gemara you see that there's a way of people to have in mind, it's unbelievable, they could have in mind a certain person in their head, and if they have that person in their head while they're doing something while they're together with their husbands, then the child will end up looking or acting like that person. Says the Chasam Sofer, it's possible that's why they suspected their wives of being together with Moshe Rabbeinu. They knew it didn't make any sense. They realized it didn't make any sense. But all the kids looked and acted like Moshe Rabbeinu. Because all the wives wanted their kids to be like Moshe. And according to this Gemara, you see that you can do that. I don't know how it works with physical DNA. I have no idea how that would work. But somehow, if you have a Talmud Chacham, a great tzaddik in mind, then your child will be like that great tzaddik. I'm sorry?
With the sticks,
very, very good. That somehow this happens, and somehow it's able to go through. So somehow Rabbi Yochanan was able to make that happen. Or Rabbi Yochanan did that, so too with Moshe Rabbeinu. So that would be why. They saw that their kids all looked and acted like Moshe Rabbeinu. They're like, what's going on here? So they suspected Moshe Rabbeinu being together with their wives, even though it didn't make any sense. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. Maral Diskin says he couldn't even go to every person and placate them. Couldn't go over to their houses and say, hey, I'm sorry, I did nothing to do. Because if the person wasn't home, he's just caught going to the house of a person with the wife that he was suspected of being together with. So he didn't want to go anywhere near any of the houses as well, said the Maral Diskin, and he wouldn't go there. We're going to end with this, guys. We're going to end with all of this. There are those that say that this whole idea was something very, very remedy, hinty, as opposed to something which was literal. Rav Schwab says that the Torah in this world is called engaged, and there's sodos of the Torah that not everybody gets. Korach and his men felt that Moshe Rabbeinu was holding them back from learning the secrets of the Torah. It was as if he was stealing their wife, and the Torah was their wife. That was the idea behind it, and that's what they were doing. So Korach and his men were like, what are you stealing our wives for? Not literally our wives, but the Torah that we should be getting because we're smart enough to get it. That's one thing. Moshe said, listen, you guys don't deserve that Torah. That's number one. The Chassam Sofer says very similarly. They felt that he was Mekabel all of his Kedusha from them. Remember they all had those crowns? Nasa and Nishma. What happened to those crowns after the day goes off?
There was Moshe.
They all went to Moshe. So they felt that the Kedusha that Moshe Rabbeinu had all came from them. So they said, the only reason why you're Kadosh Moshe is because you got it from us. It's as if you were together with our wives. It's as if you took on our life and you took on our stuff. You're stealing from us and you're pretending to be great when it's really our greatness that was given to you. That's what they said, and they accused them of being over on Eish HaSheish. There's also a Balaturim, a Baal Shem Tov guys, and there's also an Avir Yaakov, Rav Yaakov Abuchatzera. But we're going to end with that for right now. Shkoyach, guys. Have a great